the first chapter of the Nectar Devotion. The homework for tomorrow is complete the chapter, page 10 through 17, and answer the following. 1A, 1E, 1F, 1G, 1H, and 1I. That means all of 1 except for B, C, and D. And then 2, 3, and 4. All of 1 except B, C, and D, and 2, 3, and 4. Now, should I say it again?
Must we do 2, 3, 4?
Yes. Do 2, 3, and 4, and 1, except for parts, those parts I mentioned, what is it? B, C, and D. Okay? Now, the first page of the first chapter of the Nectar Devotion begins with a quote by Srila Kapiladeva, which says, "My dear mother, those who are pure devotees and who have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation have their minds so much engaged in my service that they are never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in that service. They do not even beg to live in my abode with me." So from this quote, which is a further explanation or definition of pure devotional service, we get an idea of how satisfying rendering service is according to the instructions of Rupa Goswami, Anya Vilasita Sunyam Ganakama Navrita Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttama. There is a tendency for us, if we have material desires in our heart, or we are materially conditioned, if we think of performing pure devotional service and without anything for ourselves, there's a tendency to worry, either in a subtle way or a gross way, how will I become happy? Who'll take care of me? But in this verse, it describes that someone who is actually rendering devotional service on the exalted level that is described here is so satisfied just with the service that they're not interested, such a person is not interested in asking anything in return for that service. Even to live in Krishna's abode. In other words, they're not even interested in liberation. How amazing is this devotional service when it is rendered on the pure platform? It is so satisfying to the heart that one is satisfied by the service in and of itself and doesn't need any return for that service. It is not like a material job where one goes to the office and he works 40, 44, 46 hours a week. When the boss is looking, he's doing something. He makes believe he's busy. If any of you have seen, especially in India or everywhere all over the world, the office workers in the railway or something like that, or any of the government offices, all day they walk in, hello, hey everyone, hello, bye, how are you, just shaking hands, and then they sit and do nothing all day long. And then when the boss comes, they pull some papers and shuffle this paper and shuffle that paper. And the main business is keeping the paperweight on the paper so the fan doesn't blow it away. But why are they doing that? That service, and in China, there's an expression, the iron rice bowl. You know that expression? Yeah, if you get a government job, it is called the iron rice bowl, because if you have a clay rice bowl, it will break. But an iron rice bowl, it will never break. So once you're in a government job, you're set. Your food is set for your life. But who can imagine doing some kind of a job or a service and not getting any pay for it? If it was announced in the government work or any kind of job, you are now working, but you don't get any pay for it, starting tomorrow, no one would show up for work. But devotional service is exactly the opposite. The actual work itself, the service itself is so satisfying that the pure devotee does not want anything in return for the service. The service in and of itself is sufficient to bring him great happiness. That is pure devotional service. And it is so much to the degree, the satisfaction that comes to one from rendering pure devotional service, as mentioned in this first verse by Kapila Dev, is so great that one doesn't even want to become liberated to live on the same planet as Krishna. There are six, or rather five different types of liberation. One is called Sayujya, becoming one with Krishna. That is never accepted by the devotees. Never, ever accepted. They never wish to merge with Krishna. Then there is Samipya, Salokya, Sarupya, and Sharshti. Sharshti means you get the same opulences as Krishna. Sarupya means you have the same form as Narayan, forearm form. Salokya means you live on the same planet as Krishna or Narayan. And Samipya means you're an intimate associate. So these are the five different types of liberation. And they are transcendental. And yet, the pure devotee doesn't even require that. Janmani janmani shvare bhavattad bhakti ahaituki toyi. That the satisfaction is coming from the service itself, pleasing Krishna. So we can just imagine how wonderful it is to render exalted devotional service. That there is nothing a devotee would trade for that devotional service. Now, after explaining this point, at the bottom of page 3, there's a list, and continuing on to page 4, there's a list of six characteristics of pure devotional service. These six characteristics, two by two, are awarded to the devotee as he advances in Krishna consciousness from the stages of sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti and to prema bhakti. This will be explained in the beginning of the next chapter. For that purpose of understanding which characteristics of pure devotional service come on the sadhana platform and which characteristics of pure devotional service come on the bhava platform and which characteristics of pure devotional service appear on the prema platform, they are ordered in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But for other reasons of his own presentation, Prabhupada in the Nectar Devotion has changed the order of the way that these six are presented. But the same point is there. Now, the six items or characteristics of pure devotional service are as follows. The two that appear on the sadhana level are kleshagni, or number one, pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. We are suffering in this world for so many different reasons, and we'll be explaining these in detail. And klesha means distress, and agni means fire. So pure devotional service is the fire that burns up all distress, even on the sadhana platform. The second characteristic, number two, is subhadha, is devotional service, pure devotional service is all auspicious. It is glorious in so many ways. They will be explained in detail. This also occurs on the sadhana platform. Next, the two qualities of pure devotional service that occur on the bhava platform are the next two, that it puts one in transcendental, number four, pure devotional service is rarely achieved, which is so durlava. This is on the bhava platform. It is very rare. We'll describe why later and what bhava bhakti is. And bhava bhakti is going to be described later in the this eastern side of the ocean near the end. In the next to last chapter, bhava bhakti is going to be described, and it's rare. And number five, those in pure devotional service on the bhava platform, they deride even the conception of liberation. Impersonalists, yogis, tapasis, people who are performing sacrifices, they are thinking continuously of how can I become free from the material world. Just like prisoners in the prison house are counting days. This is the tendency in the prison. They on the wall, they write 99, and then they cross it out, 98, as their days. Because all they're thinking about is becoming free. That is the negative conception meant for prisoners. Because when you're in prison, you want to become free, but when you're free, you want to do things. So the negative conception, the freedom from bondage, is the conception that the prisoners have. And similarly, those Baddha Jivas, the souls bound by the three modes of material nature, are longing to become free. Because freedom, just the act of freedom, is pleasure, full of pleasure. But Krishna consciousness, the pleasure of Krishna consciousness on the bhava platform, derides and minimizes and makes appear insignificant the pleasure achieved by liberation. That is number five, and it is called moksha laguta krit. Those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. So the two characteristics of pure devotional service in sadhana bhakti, which are, who can tell me one of them? Yes. Kleshagni. And what is the meaning of Kleshagni? It destroys material misery. And the second one, characteristic?
Subhada.
And what does Subhada mean?
Auspiciousness.
These two qualities are also naturally included in one who achieves bhava bhakti. And the four qualities of bhava bhakti, which include the two qualities of sadhana bhakti, are also included in the characteristics of prema bhakti. The two qualities of prema bhakti are number three here, which is sandrandananda visheshatma, or pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. Sandrandananda visheshatma means one achieves in prema bhakti a pleasure of a completely different quality. In Madhur Jakadamani, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the beauty of the Lord and he compares it to a rain cloud. But actually, Krishna's transcendental bodily complexion has nothing to do with a rain cloud of this world. It is something completely transcendental. But to just give us an idea of the complexion of Krishna's, that Krishna possesses, it is compared to the most wonderful of rain clouds. Just to give us an idea, because how can we describe something on the transcendental platform to someone who is not on the transcendental platform? So therefore, analogy has to be used to describe it. But here, a different technique of describing the happiness of Krishna consciousness on the Prema Bhakti platform is given. It is Sandrandananda Visheshatma. It gives the soul so much pleasure of a completely different quality that is not possible to describe or experience in the material world. It is completely beyond anything. One time in the hippie in the hippie days, in when Prabhupada was beginning his preaching in the East Village in New York in 1965-1966, one of the hippies who was taking drugs asked Prabhupada how the happiness of Krishna consciousness compares to LSD. Now, what does happiness of Krishna consciousness have to do with LSD? Nothing at all. But to give him an idea, Prabhupada said, it is like an ocean of LSD. Because they are taking 500 micros, something or others, of LSD, and they are thinking that's wonderful. So Krishna consciousness is like an ocean. But actually, Krishna consciousness has nothing to do with that. That's an intoxication. It's forbidden. But to plant some idea in that fallen soul's mind that Krishna consciousness was unlimitedly better, he took an item which that person thought was giving him pleasure in the material world and saying, oh, if you think that's nice, you should. And then you think, no, I won't do that. That tendency is there as kuta. Then after kuta is bija, which means, there's a Sanskrit term for it, vashana, means personality, or psychological and actual tendencies, psychological disposition to do something. Someone has a tendency to steal. Someone has a tendency to lie. Someone has a tendency to cheat. Someone has a tendency to break one or more of the four regulative principles, to drink. People have these tendencies, psychological dispositions. Way after kuta, this is called bija. And when you're at the, when you have a strong psychological tendency to something, and this comes along with your karma, your birth. In some places, just by your birth, you begin stealing and taking drugs at a young age. Or this is what happens, or engaging in all kinds of illicit activities at a young age. And another birth that is not at all present. And the fourth parabdha is when you actually do something. It's manifest. You actually commit a sinful activity. And the reactions for that activity, when they come to you, they are also parabdha. And also, the sinful desires, that is also reactions. Sex desire itself is a sinful reaction. All the vashanas, these bijas, they're all sinful reactions. But different stages, from immature or unmanifest to a little bit maturing, then almost mature, and then parabdha mature. Now, Padma Purana describes, as Prabhupada says here, that devotional service is so powerful that it removes all the stages, one by one, starting with parabdha. It removes all the stages of sinful reactions, one by one, starting with aparabdha, unmanifest. So that is the example that we give. We wonder, you know, I've taken initiation, I'm a devotee, and still I'm getting some reactions. You know, certain things are happening to me. I still have a body, so therefore I have some reactions left. I still speak with a New York accent. I have some reactions left because these are removed one by one. And Krishna allows the parabdha karma to exist, because without parabdha karma, what would happen? We would die instantaneously. So for the preaching of the devotee, he allows it, but he minimizes it, one's parabdha karma. Tate nu kampam su samikshamano bunjaneva. So we should see anything that happens to us as minimized sinful reaction that comes to us. In addition, the example that we often give is what? What is the example that we give for a devotee after he becomes a devotee in his karma? Who knows that example?
Okay, Scott?
You know, due to certain activities, we might, sinful activities might be, the result might be that it should be. But actually, we just get a cap.
Yeah, but no, that's not the one I meant. That's Krishna minimizes it. But what's the example? The what?
The fan.
The fan. That's the one that's always given. The plug is removed, and yet the fan keeps turning. So that means that all these are removed, but the parabdha, there's no more electricity. So it's just a matter of time before the fan stops removing if you don't involve yourself in any further karma. And that is actually the example, the answer to one of the questions that was asked, I think it was to Prasanatma, about the karma. What's the relationship between tolerance and purification, right? Wasn't that the question that was asked? You asked that question? The answer is that you have your parabdha karma. And if when it hits you, you tolerate it, and it's finished. And therefore you're finished with it. If you react to it, just like in my previous life, I pushed Prasanatma. And in this life, I'm walking down the street and Prasanatma pushes me. And I just think, oh, Krishna's so kind. He has done this to me. And I tolerate it. That means that karma is finished. But on the other hand, if he pushes me, and I say, hey you, come over here, then more karma is going to come. I'm accruing more karma. So therefore, that is the relationship between tolerance and purification. It's getting rid of the parabdha karma, just letting it come. The fan is still turning, but gradually, if we don't react, it slows down. So by the mercy of pure devotional service, so many of the different things that we do, and especially by performing pure devotional service on the highest levels, that everything is immediately removed. This removal of the karma in these different stages, it cannot be done through, towards the end of page 4, Prabhupada explains, that it cannot be done, austerity, charity, ritualistic ceremonies. They can counteract reactions, but it cannot remove the seed from the heart as pure devotional service can. Ritualistic activities, prayaschitta, atonement, and the story of Ajamil shows that. The question about Ajamil, the reason why the story of Ajamil is told in the Bhagavatam is because after in the fifth canto, so many different hells were described. So the question was asked by Maharaj Prickett, how are the people going to be saved from all these hellish tortures, punishments? So Sukadev Goswami first tried saying by performing prayaschitya, performing atonement, therefore Vedic ritualistic of atonement, therefore they won't have to suffer. And then Maharaj Prickett correctly said, yes, they won't have to suffer, but their sinful desire is not removed from their heart, so therefore they will have to suffer later on. And then he told the story of Ajamil to show how by chanting the holy names, engaging in pure devotional service, even the sinful desire can be removed from the heart. So that is the process. So examples are given here against activities that don't purify the heart but just stop the reaction, such as the elephant's bathing, and things like that. And then finally, the Padmara Purana describes pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the highest enlightenment. And when such enlightenment is there, it is just like a blazing forest fire, killing all the inauspicious snakes of desire. That means it's killing it on the earlier levels than parabdha karma. Okay. I don't think we're going to have time to go further than this. But tomorrow, we'll do the remaining five. These two, Kleshagni and Subhada, They come together. Sinful reactions go, auspiciousness comes. I have over there four different types of auspiciousness, and we'll see how Prabhupada has arranged the purport in his explanation of all auspiciousness to describe these four that are actually mentioned by Jiva Goswami. I'll mention them now, and then we'll go, and that will be the organization of auspiciousness that you'll see. That Jiva Goswami describes how Krishna consciousness is all auspicious in four ways. One, it brings blessings to the world. Second, it attracts the whole world to the person who possesses this Krishna consciousness. Third, a person who possesses the pure devotional service, even on the sadhana level, has all good qualities. So as was pointed out in Ananta's talk, that a person who is practicing devotional service, he should have all good qualities. Because he's purified. He must have them. And the fourth, he is happy and contented. These are the four qualities of auspicious qualities that come as a result of pure devotional service, even at the sadhana platform. Okay, thank you. Any questions?
Question.
Sinful reactions are removed.
But
how deep is the question? How deep are the sinful reactions removed? Are they removed all the way back to the aparabdha stage? The answer is no. Only pure devotional service can do that. So therefore people go and they take bath and they go back and sin. Sinning, atoning, sinning, atoning, sinning, atonement, condemned. This process is condemned.
So, but what about as a devotee then, as we are practicing devotional service, we're trying to engage ourselves in devotional service, are we free from sins just as those people who go to those four places are, but we're also working on the subtle ones?
I'm not sure what you're asking.
Otherwise, should we go to those four places? And
are you asking only should we go to those four places?
Well, not just that, but in other words, it seems like...
Well, how can a devotee get his Krishna consciousness to a high enough level so he's freed from sinful reactions? Which is your question?
The question is that it seems that you can get a head start if you went to these four places.
But the Bhagavatam describes that the benefit of going to those places is to associate with holy men.
Right.
So that is the real benefit. So therefore, find yourself a holy man. And you're already in. You're in the places. So where do you want to go? You want to go to another one. This mentality is...
No, I was interested in that.
Yes.
So, the sins are... purified at these places, but in other words, one is performing devotional service.
But it's very difficult in Kali Yuga. Holy places tend to be covered. People dump their sins there in the rivers, etc. The pure devotee is needed. But the places are good. But you find when you go to these places without doing it properly that you go and you feel very peaceful and happy, then you come back and as you're descending, so your mind also descends back into its place like that. Yeah.
My mind is just spinning now after all this. Can you explain a little bit more briefly again the difference between Kula and Bija?
My understanding is Kuta is the first, it's the beginning of bija. It's a psychological tendency. A desire entering the mind. Bija is when you have that psychological tendency as part of your personality. Some people are just inclined to steal. Have you noticed that? Some people are inclined to towards illicit sex. Some people are so inclined to gambling. They might not be engaging in gambling, but they have that vashana, or that's part of their personality. So before that is the first inkling of that in the consciousness. No. No, they're just different stages of development. This is the description of Padma Purana. There are different stages of development. That it's not there at all. It's in seed lying in the heart, like so many weed seeds are under the ground. Then the weed sprouts under the ground, like Kuta. There's no manifestation of it at all. It's sprouting under the ground, right? Just a little bit. But it's going to come up. When it comes up and you see a little sproutling coming up, a seedling, it's bija, and that means the fruit is not far away. When you're up to the point of a strong psychological tendency, these are called purva sanskaras, previous impressions on the consciousness. It's very difficult. And so many devotees have to fight this. You know, they know they shouldn't be doing something, but they have a strong psychological tendency to do it. So they have to really take shelter of pure devotional service, otherwise they will lose their fight.
So that's the example of...
Is that clear? Is it clear in everyone's mind what these four are?
In this example,
yeah.
It seems to me that there is like overlapping. Sometimes this kuta, as you describe it right now, is when you say sprouts, but under the earth. And we don't see it, but all is sprout. So in this particular example, the kuta seems to be a little bit ahead from the bija.
No. The kuta, just like when you plant a seed, it starts to germinate, but it's not above the earth yet, yes? And you can pull it out and you can see it. The seed is broken and there's a little root coming out and something's coming out. But it's not yet developed into a seedling. So we're calling the seedling the bija. So I have a little bit of desire in my mind, okay. But later on, that's going to develop, because I'll cultivate it, and then it'll become a psychological tendency.
So in a parabdha state,
I'm
suffering. I'm suffering a reaction for what I did in the past. Like an example you gave, person has to push you in the past life, and now you pushed him, and you're being pushed by him.
Yeah.
So. If you are performing the pure devotional service, you tolerate that. You just say, "This is my karma. This is natural."
Or to protect Krishna's, if you say this body is a vehicle for Krishna's service, I'm going to protect it. Then there's no further reaction in karma.
That means that by then the desire for further sinful activity is stopped, because that reaction will cause you to create further. To have a new desire.
That's what Prabhupada calls this endless chain. There's a chain that starts. You engage, you have a psychological tendency, so you engage in that sinful reaction, sinful act, and part of the reaction for that is that it puts the impression deeper in your consciousness and you want to engage in that more. Unfortunately, we all have experiences like this. It develops. That's part of the sinful reaction, that your desire develops.
You see, in an example like it's given here, a person who is very ugly. Just suppose a person has a big nose. How that's going to stop?
That's one kind of manifest sinful reaction of parupta karma.
You tolerate that situation and say,
Is she?
Yeah.
Otherwise, that would induce him to do further sinful activities.
Well, it's going to affect his mind. It may not. He may be poor. He may be ugly. But he may not. He may just accept it. Yeah. But that in itself is a sinful reaction. Also.
Effective.
That he's ugly. That itself is a sinful reaction, and it may induce him, it may make him very miserable. The physical may affect the mental, it may make him no self-confidence, and that may make this happen, and that may make that. It's such an intricate, complicated mess, tangle. Okay, last question. Next to last question.
I think we understand how three to four, how when the desire is there, how we cannot act on it. Cannot act on a sinful desire. We always have to tolerate it and create a Krishna. What's more difficult, but that's often difficult when it gets to that point. So how to stop the kuta from becoming a bij? When we first may notice a slight mental tendency, but it's not so strong with so many things.
Increase your Krishna consciousness. Chant better. Increase your desire to be a devotee. Don't try to do it on the psychological platform. Just let it come and go. Don't play with the psychological platform. Play with Krishna and His holy name. Then Krishna will help you. That's the point. Then Krishna will do the cleaning. From within the heart. Abhadrani Shinvitam Svakata Krishna Punya Shapana Kirtanam Ridyantistoya Bhadrani Vidunoti Savitsvitam. Okay, Les, Charles?
This is a simple question. Can you define again Unmani unmanifested?
Unmanifested? Like a seed deep in the earth. You have nothing, no manifestation. Just like a child who's 1 year old. Later on, he may become a big scholar, or he may become a musical genius, but it's in seed form. And later on, as he grows older, all these desires manifest. And all his karma will manifest. You can't tell when a child is very, very young. No exhibition. But later on, they will manifest. And some of them have been sitting for many, many, many lives, and they will manifest later. There's no escape.
Next is lesson number 5.
We will move on to the second of the qualities of pure devotional service, a quality that is also exhibited in the stage of sadhana bhakti. What is the name of the first quality in English, the one we spoke about yesterday? In English. I can't hear you. Yeah, klesha means distress, klesha agni. Relief from all distress, but it also means actually relief from all karma, which means not only distress, but also pious reactions too. But here it is mentioned specifically klesha agni, the removal of all klesha or distress or those things that cause us distress. All the different reactions that will cause us distress. Klesha agni, the removal, relief from material distress. We began briefly mentioning a little something on the second one. Now what is the second quality of pure devotional service that also exists in sadhana bhakti? The beginning of all auspiciousness. It is all auspicious. And what is the Sanskrit for that? Subhada. Yes, it is all auspicious. Now, we mentioned yesterday that there were four different qualities that actually Srila Jiva Goswami has given to describe in what way Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. The purport is organized or Prabhupada's explanation is organized along these four qualities. The first one is Krishna consciousness is a blessing to the world. And a devotee who has attained pure devotional service, even on the sadhana platform, he is a blessing to the world. He actually is a blessing to the world. And Prabhupada explains that. That the United Nations is there to help the world. But what help has actually the United Nations done? What blessings has it conferred upon the world? Prabhupada had often given the example that since the United Nations was started, the nations have not at all become united. Simply the flags or the countries have increased. So it is not actually blessing the world with what the people want. And what do the people want? They want peace. They want prosperity. They want happiness. They want freedom from anxiety. So not the United Nations, not television, not computers, not advancement of technology, not scientific advancement, not anything other than Krishna consciousness can actually give the world, bless the world with what it wants. The second quality is described also on page 8, near the beginning, at the end of the first paragraph and at the beginning of the second paragraph, is that for a devotee, even at sadhana bhakti, the whole world is attracted to him. He becomes very attractive due to his purity. So Prabhupada begins by saying how the Krishna consciousness movement can attract the attention of the whole world, because this is the point, that devotees who are practicing pure devotional service are attractive, and how each and every man can feel pleasure in this Krishna consciousness is stated in the Padma Purana. Because one who is engaging in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is understood to be doing the best service to the whole world. And then Prabhupada gives the example that he attracts, due to his purity, the whole world. And not only human society, but he also attracts the animals. And an example of that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given. And as an example of that, Prabhupada himself, attracting so many devotees everywhere he went. So many devotees would come and be so ecstatic because of the sweet attractiveness of his association. And everyone just simply was hankering to get that association. And there is an example given that Saruchi, who is Saruchi? Who is Saruchi? Yes, the stepmother. Suniti and Saruchi. Suniti was the actual mother, the queen of one of the queens, the elder queen of Uttanapada, and Saruchi was the second, or the younger, or the more favored queen of Uttanapada. Now, was she very loving to Dhruva Maharaj? No. Dhruva Maharaj just wanted something simple, like a little boy. He climbed up on her knee. Something so simple, she said, "Go away, child. You cannot sit." It was actually on Uttanapada's knee. She kicked him off and said, "You cannot sit on the throne because you have not taken your birth from my womb. Go!" So she was so envious of Dhruva Maharaj. But then Dhruva Maharaj, what did he do? He went to the forest. And what did he do? He practiced austerity. And what happened? He became a devotee. By the mercy of whom? Narada Muni. And he actually saw the Lord, and he became such a great devotee. And then when he came back, when Saruchi saw him, did she say, "Oh, go away. You cannot come back anymore"? No. She immediately embraced him. Because he was a devotee. Because devotional service attracts everyone. It is all auspicious. The third point is that a devotee has all good qualities. This is the third paragraph. Furthermore, a person engaged in Krishna consciousness, on page 9, acting in devotional service can develop all the good qualities that are generally found in the demigods. As it is said, yasyasta bhaktir bhagavar kinchana, that a devotee, just by performing Bhagavat bhakti, pure devotional service, that he develops all the qualities of the demigods, all the good qualities. And the first qualities that he develops are the first two mentioned here, that he is able to bless the world and he is all attractive. Those are the first two qualities he develops. And gradually, all the other exalted qualities also become developed. And the fourth point, and in counterposition to that point, someone who is not a devotee, he cannot have good qualities. Why? Manarato, what's the? Asati bahi. That he is just traveling on the mental platform, and on his whim, he could be very kind to everyone, and then something happens and he's ready to kill everyone. Because he's on the mental platform, he has no spiritual grounding. So ultimately, a non-devotee cannot have deep spiritual qualities. And Prabhupada gives so many examples here of devotees giving up illicit activities and developing good qualities. Now the fourth one, in the auspiciousness of a devotee, is that he is happy and contented. Now, in the organization of this chapter, Prabhupada gives that a major heading, if you notice on page 10, called Happiness in Krishna Consciousness. This is actually the fourth quality of auspiciousness. But Prabhupada will also include one of the qualities of Bhava Bhakti, Moksha Lagudakrit, that it decries the happiness of liberation. He will include some of the information in here. But Krishna, there are different types of happiness. There's basically three different types of happiness, and there's a fourth that is added by the commentators. The first kind of happiness is material happiness for sense gratification. The second kind of happiness is happiness that comes from merging with Brahman. The third kind of happiness is Krishna conscious happiness, and the added happiness is the happiness that comes from the different siddhis or mystic perfections. So one by one, Prabhupada is explaining here how none of these happinesses compare to the happiness of Krishna consciousness. So the first one that is described is the happiness of impersonal Brahman. So many quotes and shastric evidence are given here to show that and examples, practical examples, that one cannot be happy trying to merge in with Brahman. First of all, manasat, because avasudha buddhaya yenye ravindakshiva muktimaninas tvayasta bhaved avasudha buddhaya. Because of impure intelligence, there is always the chance of falling down. And as Prabhupada said, there are so many impersonalists going around begging for their food to get some chapatis, and there are more impersonalists than there are chapatis. So there is always anxiety for that reason as well. And he gave the example, to me even, he said that they must fall down from this position. And what is the reason? He said they get lonely. Because they want some type of relationship and realization and happiness. And what happens is they fall down to the material platform and engage in some social welfare activities. They're saying that everything in this world is illusion, and yet they're opening up a hospital. If the material body is illusion, therefore, and the diseases that affect the material body are illusory, then why build a hospital? It's only illusion. So they're building an illusory hospital. They're spending all their efforts to build an illusory hospital to cure the illusory body of its illusory disease. Therefore, Mayavadi. They're in Maya, and they are following the path of Maya, actually. So, Prabhupada dismisses that if they were on that platform of real happiness, then they would not come to the material platform again. And also, the examples of the Kumaras and of Sukadeva Goswami. Sukadeva Goswami had left home, and his father sent out two verses to him. One verse, a whole pakiyam, stanam kuta kalakutam, talking about how, who is more merciful than Krishna? Because Putana came to Krishna to give milk, but actually she had spread her breast with poison. And still Krishna gave her Dhatri liberation, the liberation of becoming like a nurse. So who is more, who else can one take shelter of? Kam va dayalu, dayalum sharanam. Who else should one take shelter of? Someone so merciful as Krishna. So that, Sukadeva Goswami, when he heard that, he immediately came back to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. He became so attracted. He gave up his impersonal liberation. And the Kumaras, they were situated in Brahman and they were visiting Vaikuntha and they smelled the fragrance carried by the breeze of the carrying the tulsi, the breeze that had come from the Lord's lotus feet and brought the fragrance of tulsi to their nostrils. And immediately, even though they were in Brahman, their consciousness was agitated and attracted to Krishna, and they became devotees. Mokshala Gurukrit decries the happiness of liberation, and also it is all auspicious because it will situate one in the happiness beyond any material happiness, the happiness of the siddhis, as Prabhupada spends a lot of time explaining the happiness of siddhis, the happiness of material happiness, which is doomed, the happiness of Brahman. They cannot compare to Krishna conscious happiness. And the example given of that, Krishna conscious happiness, on page 13, is Kolavecha Sridhar, that he was a confidential devotee, and when benedicted by Mahaprabhu, what do you want? He said, I don't want anything. I have your devotional service, that's all I want. And the florist Sudama, when Krishna came to Mathura, he gave Krishna such a nice flower garland with so much devotion. Krishna asked him, what do you want from me? I'll give you anything you want. You name it. And he said, I just want to be your servant. That's all. So it brings one happiness and contentment like nothing else can. This is the power of pure devotional service, even on the sadhana platform. The next quality, moksha lagudakrit, that bhav is of the quality of bhava bhakti, and that is described at the bottom of page 13. With no, this is a major quality, but Prabhupada doesn't give special attention to it. At the bottom, at the end of the next, of the last complete paragraph, that is the position of a pure devotee. Even if they can be engaged 24 hours a day in devotional service, they do not want anything else, if they can be engaged. Not even the happiness of liberation or of becoming one with the Supreme. And all the different types of liberation, they are not desired by the devotees. This is described in the Narada Pranchara. But not only Sayuja liberation, but the Krishna Bhaktis, they don't desire even the other four kinds of liberation. When I first became a devotee, I remember Rupanuga Prabhu telling us that one day Krishna will come to you and say, "I am like this. What do you want?" And he was training us from the beginning how to answer when Krishna comes. It was a little bit away in time, but he was telling us what to do when Krishna comes. So when he comes and says, "What do you want?" You say to him, "No, I don't want to do any business with you. I'm not serving you for business. All I want is to be your servant continuously. I just want to be your servant and give me service. No business, not liberation, not to be on your planet." Krishna will promise anything. And this comes in the next one that we'll move to right now, Sudolabha. This is another quality of Bhava Bhakti, that Krishna will promise you anything. He's very, very chalu. What does chalu mean? He's very clever and cunning. He'll promise you anything, anything. You want liberation? Okay, here's liberation. You want sense gratification? Here's sense gratification. You want to go to Vaikuntha? Okay. You want to be on a planet, my planet? Okay. You want to have close association with me? Fine, no problem. He'll promise and offer anything before he gives, especially Prema Bhakti, but Bhava Bhakti is the particular one here. Before he gives Braja Bhakti, he'll give anything. But we should not take anything. We should hold out. Let me finish a little more. We should hold out for Krishna's service, most intimate service. So here the quality of pure devotional service, of Bhava Bhakti to Mokshala Gudakrit, and the rarity of pure devotional service. There are two reasons why Bhava Bhakti, or devotion, this quality of Siddha Bhakti, perfectional devotional service, is so rare. One reason is that Krishna holds it back. He doesn't award it very easily. He'll promise anything and give anything before he gives Bhava Bhakti. Krishna does not award this perfection very easily. It is rare. Prabhupada explains that because Krishna does not agree to award devotional service, this quality of devotional service, to merely anyone. One needs his descending mercy, which comes through the mercy of devotee. There is nothing anyone can do to get this on his own, Bhava Bhakti. There is nothing that any, it is beyond the power of the jiva soul. It is the descending mercy of the Lord through his devotees. The Lord gives the power of attorney to the devotee to give award this Bhava Bhakti, the Kripa Shakti. He gives that to his pure devotee, his advanced pure devotee. Aspiring by oneself alone to achieve devotional service is not very hopeful. One needs the mercy of a devotee. So that's the first reason. Krishna doesn't award it very easily. And the second reason why it's very rare is that we may practice devotional service in our mechanical way for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And if we don't practice it with ruchi and ashakti, taste and attachment, Krishna has no inclination to give it to us. Tatra loyam ekalam mulyam. This is the root cause. Tatra loyam. One needs attachment or greed. One must really want serve Krishna. Taste. Tatra loyam api mulyam ekalam. There is one price only. So this, if one practices his sadhana with great ruchi and ashakti, taste and attachment, if one develops this taste, spontaneity of service and likes it and develops it and cultivates it, that will incline Krishna to give it. But still, he still tests the devotee and holds it back, this bhava bhakti, because he doesn't agree to award it very easily. He tests the devotee. So one may get very discouraged thinking this pure devotional service on this caliber is so rare, I will never get it. But Jiva Goswami, in one of his commentaries, explains, it is rare, but it is not that rare if one practices properly with Ruchi and Ashakti. One should practice with great taste his devotional service, not with malaise and thinking, oh, now I am, you know, now, and always be running the other way and someone has to come and grab you and force you to do service. You could practice for hundreds and hundreds of lives and the result of Siddha Bhakti will not be there. One has to have his own taste. And that will incline Krishna after time if he desires to inspire his devotee to give it to you. But actually it's the devotee who will give it by his mercy. So Jiva Goswami Pad says that if you find that you've been practicing for so long and still have no deep taste, he instructs that one should increase his hearing and chanting and good association, the hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. And then, if one practices properly, then it can be easily obtained. And there are so many quotes in the Bhagavatam that explain this. But this is the cost, the price. One has to have a great taste for this. There's just two more points. So let me finish those and then we'll call for questions. The next one, those are the two qualities of bhava bhakti, and this bhava bhakti is very... From bhava bhakti to prema bhakti is easy. Bhava bhakti is called prema ankur, the seed of prema. Easy, relatively. It's just getting rid of all the anarthas to come to the stage of to somehow or another elicit Krishna's mercy. That is the difficulty. So the next is the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, which is actually Sanjrandananda Visheshatma. Here Prabhupada explains that the happiness of Krishna consciousness, of prema bhakti, this is the first of the two qualities of prema bhakti, the happiness of prema bhakti cannot be compared with anything in the material world. So therefore, Rupa Goswami opens by saying, if Brahmananda, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by a trillionfold, we can't even imagine what a trillion is practically, but if that happiness is multiplied by a trillionfold, it still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service, meaning prema bhakti. And then that quote that we gave in the quiz, such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than straw in the street. This is the goal of Krishna consciousness. Now, it's an interesting note here is that Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami both quote the Bhavarta Dipika. What is the Bhavarta Dipika? Yes. He's often referred to as Swami Charan because he is the oldest commentator on the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is the name of his commentary, Bhavarta Dipik, Bhava Arta Dipik. And Sridhar Swami is accepted by the Mayavadis as a Mayavadi. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted him as a Vaishnava because of technical reasons, and he was preaching to the Mayavadis, so he sometimes pleased them by giving them Mayavadi-like interpretations. But ultimately he was a Vaishnava, and his commentary is accepted as a Vaishnava commentary. So to show how the realization, the actual realization of Sridhar Swami, Rupa Goswami has included his quote here, even though there are so many quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam itself, showing how the happiness of Krishna consciousness is far superior and completely different from any material happiness. Still, the quote from the commentary is given by Rupa Goswami to show everyone that this is the actual realization of Swami Charan, Sridhar Swami, and that it is a Vaishnava realization. Saying that the happiness derived from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and even liberation is no better than thrown on the street. So what is his realization? That's pure Vaishnava realization. That is why that quote is there. The last quality of pure devotional service, and again, the quality of prema bhakti, is that it is so powerful, Sri Krishna Akarshini, that attracts Krishna himself. And Sri Krishna means it attracts Krishna and the entourage of Krishna. So as we heard how Srimati Radharani is the epitome of devotional service, of Ladini Shakti. She is so powerful in devotional service, and she even attracts Krishna. And the devotees in Prema Bhakti, they similarly attract Krishna, and practically they control Krishna. Actually speaking, the devotees in the highest forms of Prema Bhakti, they completely control Krishna. They wrap him around their little finger. That is how powerful this Prema Bhakti devotional service is. They drive Krishna mad. They have him acting like a puppet in their hands. So these quotes are so nice. How Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he's acting as a chariot driver, a mere servant for his devotee Arjuna. He's doing unlimited things for his devotees. He's acting as the messenger, just like a servant of the Pandavas. This is how powerful Prema Bhakti is. What to speak of Krishna's relationship with the devotees in Braja. And one quote by Rupa Goswami, one of the verses to end this section. This is actually the end of the first section, the first wave in the eastern side of the ocean, the general description of Krishna consciousness, because it describes all the qualities of pure devotional service from sadhana bhakti to prema bhakti. So this is the end, and Rupa Goswami describes that even a little taste for this pure devotional service is like a passport that will help us understand bhakti. Even a little taste will help us understand. And on the other hand, argument, the path of nyaya or any other method, will not help us at all. We need the Shastra, and a taste for that, and understanding from Shastra will help us understand everything. Now, there's one other little thing, and then we'll end. I got one letter from a friend of mine, Barsana Swami, and in it he told a very nice pastime that I'll read. And it talks about Prema Bhakti, and how intricate Prema Bhakti is. Intricate in the sense of how it controls Krishna and the type of loving exchanges that go on. I'll read it exactly as he wrote it. Krishna's friends made him the king of Chetravan. Marumangal and others would then travel through nearby forests announcing that the new ruler of Chetravan was the son of Nanda Maharaj. And no one was allowed to pick any flowers there, and offenders would be punished by the king. So Marumangal was traveling all over and said, "No one can pick any flowers, or you'll be punished by the king. We have declared Krishna the king." Now when Lalita Devi heard this, Lalita became furious. She dressed Radharani as the queen and sat her on a valuable throne. When the queen ordered her friends to arrest that person who had the audacity to proclaim any other authority, they started for Chetravan, armed with flowers. Seeing the army of Sakis, all the associates and assistants of Srimati Radharani, who were coming for a fight, Marumangal ran away without even telling Krishna. He was captured and bound with flower garlands and brought before Radha for judgment. He pleaded guilty and asked for the kind of punishment that would fill his stomach. Then she let him return with a message for his king. Returning to Krishna with his hands still tied, Marumangal replied, "This is a result of proclaiming you the king. That lady is very powerful. What can you do to her? The god of love even trembles at the movement of her eyes. Listen to me, Krishna. You had better surrender to her now. I only want to glorify you. I only want to glorify you, Krishna," Marumangal said. "And for that, I will tolerate any kind of insult." Saying this, Marumangal took Krishna by the hand to Radha. She felt ashamed and would have immediately given up the throne, but the Sakis advised her not to give up the throne. Krishna didn't know what he should do, so Marumangal sat him down beside Radha. Marumangal entreated Radha, "Please accept Krishna's surrender and take back your kingdom. The tribute I suggest for you to receive will be his divine embrace." Pleased by this arrangement, Lalita put sweet balls in Marumangal's smiling mouth, but he told her she was offensive for tying him up. "And if you want to be excused," he said, "you have to feed me 1,000,000 laddus." Marumangal ate the sweets while enjoying the beauty of Radha and Shyamasunda, surrounded by the Sakis. Saying he had many things to do, Marumangal left with a heart full of joy, and Radha and Shyam entered their cottage. So how Krishna, Prema Bhakti, Sri Krishna Karshini. Okay.